You're listening to the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Just dancing in the studio.
That's really,
Barry Manilow. Good morning and welcome to Freedom Works.
My hair just frizzed out. It just got all frizzy.
Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show, Tampa Bay's libertarian radio voice. I am Paul Molloy. It is Friday, April the 11th. Thank you for joining us. We are going to be talking in a few minutes with Chris Edwards. He is director of tax policy studies at the Cato Institute in Washington. We're going to be discussing the IRS, appropriately enough, since April 15th is a coming, and whether that agency should be revamped or completely done away with. I mean, so many things. So stay tuned for a very interesting discussion. And now that Kathleen Sebelius is out as health secretary, will Obamacare foes be placated? Well, it's not likely, but we're going to talk about that as well. And stick around for our Freedom Works Ultimate Top 10 list, because you're going to find out the top 10 most expensive hotel suites in the world. The top 10. And I know Lee Clark has slept at least three or four of them. So that will be interesting. Anyway, Freedom Works, we are now going to be coming to you at a new day and time. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time. It starts this coming Monday. Again, we're going to be with you Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time. And we hope that you will join us at that time. We're very much looking forward to it. We are here with our program to promote the libertarian perspective, the idea that the more freedom that you have, the happier, the better off, the more content you're going to be. Personal liberty, as you were promised in our documents, our founding documents, the Declaration of Independence, and the Constitution. And we believe it's liberty that has been slowly, but very, very much for surely, being pulled away from you. And so that's why we do this program. And let's never forget that. Anyway, we're glad you're with us, and we would love to have you give us your thoughts. You can call in our toll-free number, 866-826-1340. Again, 866-826-1340. We have a local number as well. It is 727-441-3000. Also, please go to our website and find out more about our show. You will also see our new time on there. Again, it will be Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern on the Tan Talk Network. But the website is thefreedomworks.com, thefreedomworks.com. You can find out more about the show. And thanks to Lee Clark, we have our programs, our past programs there. You'll see the podcast button at the very top. Just click on it. He has set them up. Very easy to see chronologically. You want to listen to a show you've already heard, or maybe you've missed one. You will know who we are going to be talking with on that day. So please take a look at it. Anyway, we got a very interesting show. I am very much looking forward to talking with Chris Edwards. He is the director of tax policy at the Cato Institute. And I'll tell you why. Not only is April 15th in 4 days, but with the Obamacare enrollment deadline coming up, the IRS is preparing for the next step, which is tracking and penalizing the people that have not paid for health care. Do you remember that there's a penalty? Do you remember that the reason the health care law was allowed to go through was because the Supreme Court declared that it was really a tax? They were taxing you. And the federal government has the authority to levy taxes on the populace. And that was John Roberts, writing for the majority, said that it was a tax. So, therefore, if it's a tax and you don't pick it up, you pay a fine. You pay the penalty. Now, how aggressive the IRS is going to be in pursuing the fine is an open question. They are already under fire, as you may remember, for political targeting of conservative groups. And the talk of harsh fines on millions of people who don't have health care, do you think they want to do that in an election year? Huh? I don't think so. Guess who's going to go up and say, never mind on that part of Obamacare? I think the president will. But anyway, the agency says it's still drafting final tax forms. It's still hiring staff to carry out this task. And it's offering some detail on how it's going to collect penalties. Now, for most, the penalty does not come this year. All right? It will not apply until early next year if you don't get Obamacare or health insurance. But those who fail to pay insurance by by the end of March and are not exempt or did not ask for an extension, they're supposed to inform the government that they did not do so. Right. Please raise your hand if you're ready to pay a penalty to the IRS. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. And the IRS is using a trust but verify approach. So I can tell you that the fine, I don't think I'm going out on a limb to say the fine will probably not be imposed at the end of 2014. But, you know, along another line, as you may know, yesterday the House that was overseeing this Lois Lerner problem and the perhaps unlawful pursuit of conservative organizations has voted to hold Lois Lerner in contempt of Congress as Republicans are escalating their attempt to get to the bottom of this whole scandal. Now, the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee voted 21-12 to hold Lois Lerner in contempt. That was a party-line vote. All the Democrats voted against it. It now goes to the House floor. John Boehner, who is the Speaker of the House, predicted that unless Lerner agrees to cooperate, the House will vote for contempt proceedings. From there, it likely goes to the federal courts. So, will indeed Lois Lerner be called to account on this? I don't know, but I guess if it gets before the right judge, at least in the first instance, it will proceed. When I say the right judge, I mean a judge that tends to be perhaps more of a conservative bent. But this is becoming very interesting. It's like a soap opera. Anyway, let's take our break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Chris Edwards from the Cato Institute about whether or not the IRS should stick around.
The punches flew and chairs were smashed in two. There was blood and a single gunshot, but just who shot who at the Copa? Copacabana, the hottest spot north of Havana. At the Copa, Copacabana, music and passion were always the fashion at the Copa.
This is the Rays Report.
After their first off day of the season, the Rays will try and even their 9-game road trip at 2-2 with a game in Cincinnati to take on the Reds. The Rays are hoping to get on track offensively after scoring a total of just 6 runs in their last 4 games, 3 of them defeats. Certainly it would help if Desmond Jennings can keep it going from where he left off on Wednesday.
The 2-1 pitch is swung on and driven to the gap in left center field. Kane turns around, looks, and it is gone! Desmond Jennings has just hit his first home run of 2014, and the Rays take a 1-0
Jennings not only hit his first home run of the season, but he also doubled in the 7-3 loss. Tonight it's David Price opposite Johnny Cueto. Airtime on the Rays Baseball Network will be at 6:30. With a Rays Report, I'm Neil Solons.
Catch the Rays all season on the Rays Baseball Network. For tickets, visit RaysBaseball.com.
You're listening to the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back. Freedom Works. I am Paul Molloy. Thank you very much for being with us, and we're delighted to welcome Chris Edwards, who is the Director of Tax Policy at the Great Cato Institute in Washington, a wonderful libertarian think tank. And Chris, thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Well, it's our pleasure, and you're very kind to come on. I wanted to talk to you because for a couple of reasons. One is we got April 15th in 4 days, and secondly, with the IRS in the midst of this scandal, I mean, it's never been such a touchy subject to be involved with the IRS, with a Lois Lerner fiasco and the idea that the IRS is going to oversee the tax penalty if you don't pick up health care, Obamacare. So I wanted to find out, Chris, from the Cato Institute's perspective, perhaps, and your perspective, whether or not the whole concept of the IRS could be rethought, revamped, replaced, or repealed.
I agree with all of those. In fact, they have a new op-ed up at Daily Caller today where I go through 10 of the sort of civil liberties abuses that comes with the federal income tax. You know, ultimately, of course, Congress is responsible for imposing this horrible tax system. The 16th Amendment gave Congress the power to impose a so-called income tax, but it's, you know, it's Congresses over the decades and presidents who have created this ungodly mess, 75,000 pages of tax statute and regulation now. It gets more complicated all the time. And, you know, the IRS has a hell of a problem trying to enforce it. You know, the targeting of conservative groups was a huge abuse by the executive branch. But in general, the aggressiveness and the ugly enforcement of our income tax laws, mainly the fault of Congress. They pressure the IRS to maximize, to squeeze the public out of as much money as they possibly can, and it's really disgraceful that they don't put tax reform as the highest priority in Congress.
I just don't know how they could even handle the job that they're supposed to be doing. If they have indeed been looking over certain private organizations, conservative organizations, and they've now got to, and of course, you know, have to handle all the tax forms all year, and now they've got to handle the Obamacare tax penalty, I just wonder, first of all, are they up to the job? Because it's becoming overwhelming to do the job. And if they are not up to the job, then their basic function of collecting the tax correctly is going to start to suffer. Do you not agree?
Well, they've always had a problem with actually collecting the tax correctly. In fact, you know, in some of the research I did in writing this op-ed, you know, I went back through. There's been study after study showing that, you know, it's not only taxpayers make a lot of errors on their forms. Tax professionals make a lot of errors,
yeah.
And the IRS makes a lot of errors in all kinds of its different operations. So the tax code has got so ugly and so complicated that it's often no one knows what the right amount of taxes is. And for big businesses, for example, you'll occasionally read these articles where the IRS and a big corporation will fight literally for years over hundreds of millions, sometimes even billions of dollars in taxes, because the experts simply do not agree how much is owed. I mean, it's really it is a joke, and it's a disgrace. The tax code. Jimmy Carter actually, you may remember, famously said back in 1976 that the income tax is a disgrace to the human race. And since then, the number of pages in the tax code has tripled since Carter said that. So, you know, the fact that Congress, again, isn't doing anything about this is really it's really remarkable.
You know, I did my taxes, which, believe me, are simple. I just don't make that much money. And you would think it's fairly simple to do a 1040 form on your own. And it's not that simple anymore to do it. I mean,
It really isn't. And especially, I mean, my wife is self-employed, and she's got all these additional complexities when you have kids. You've got daycare expenses. There's all these complexities.
Yeah, and you got to go to another form.
It's complex, and yeah.
I mean, you've got to find another form, and then you pull the form out. And if you have an IRA deduction, or you have a, you know, and you've got to sometimes figure out the deduction, and it goes into a certain column, and you're also required to do another form. And it's supposed to include the amount in that particular deduction, but you have to do that one first. It becomes very scary to even figure it out. It took me a couple.
No, absolutely. And when there's a disagreement between you and the IRS, I mean, that starts a whole round of
I know.
Of complexity and headaches. I mean, there's a great story in the front of the Washington Post today about how the IRS, the Treasury, is going after the innocent people for debts that their parents apparently incurred decades earlier. And the people are wondering, in the Post story, wondering what the heck's going on. Why is the IRS going after me for something, for some issue from back in the 1970s that I didn't even know about? They won't give me any information. It's impossible to get through the IRS on the telephone. I mean, there's an amazing statistic that there's over 100 million people call in to the IRS every year because they've got questions on their tax forms. I mean, despite everyone going to H&R Block these days, and despite the turbo taxes, the IRS still gets 100 million phone calls a year from people confused. They only can answer 60% of those calls. 40% of the calls go unanswered because the IRS, they don't have the capability to answer these questions.
We're talking with Chris Edwards. He is the Director of Tax Policy at the Cato Institute. He's a top expert on federal and state tax and budget issues. Chris, what do you think of the flat tax as a possibility?
Oh, I've always been a big fan of the flat tax. I think it's the best way to do tax reform. You know, the flat tax that was talked about by Dick Armey and Steve Forbes for many years, that is actually a consumption-based system, meaning it doesn't double tax savings, which the current one does. So it's very conducive to business investment and entrepreneurship. It's got a low single flat rate, basically for everyone above the poverty level, which is what I think makes a lot of sense. So it really would, you know, to convert the tax code into a simple thing. People could really file their taxes on a postcard. It's a great system. It's got, you know, popular support. It's got academic support. That is the way to go. If Republicans want to push major tax reform in the years ahead, I think that's where they ought to go.
Well, let's pretend that they win the White House and they have both houses of Congress. Do you think the flat tax has any chance?
I think what the Republicans probably should do, if you look at the political strategy, is go there step by step. So Paul Ryan, in his annual budget proposal, has a halfway to a flat tax system where he basically has two rates, 10% and 25%. He clears away almost all the deductions and loopholes and credits and the like. So he's almost got a flat tax there. I think that's a very good compromise system to move forward with that, really could get enacted if they pushed hard enough.
Boy, I think it would be wonderful. You would think that most people would agree with it. But then you have the real estate industry that doesn't want the mortgage interest dropped out, and this industry and that industry, and I guess certain charitable industries, if you no longer can deduct charitable contributions. I mean, what would stand in, other than, say Democrats, not Democrats, but what would stand in the way? What is the biggest thing that would stand in the way of something like a flat tax being imposed?
You know, you can overcome the special interest pressures. You're right that, there are a number of, you know, big special interests that, you know, would complain. But I think if you got to go to the public, convince the public that this is the right thing to do. And I think every year the tax code gets more complicated. It creates more headaches, especially for the 25 million small businesses in America, which is a key constituency. So I think the constituency for reform gets bigger every year. Our current code gets uglier. I think the big 1986 Tax Reform Act showed that you can overcome special interest pressures when you've got presidential leadership, when you get a good package together, and when you lower overall rates enough. I think that convinces even some of the special interests that it's better to take the lower rate than to have the special deduction or loophole.
Yeah, you would think most people would understand that, but it just seems like we talk about the flat tax. Steve Forbes ran for president a couple of times. Presidential races ago, and I remember that was such a big issue. And then you heard about the fair tax, a little bit different. I guess that one's collected on the back end.
I think
or something.
One of the problems with the Republicans have had, frankly, for two decades. When I started looking started getting into tax policy back in the early 90s, was that there was always a divide back then between some reformers wanted to go a sales tax route and some wanted to go a flat tax route. We had the head of the Ways and Means Committee at the time, Bill Archer, a very, you know, good tax reformer. He always held out for the sales tax. Army always held out for the flat tax. Republicans have to get together, agree on a reform first. And I think going ahead, maybe the Paul Ryan tax reform plan is something that a really broad group of Republicans can agree on. So they've got to get together and agree what they want to do first before they sell it to, you know, independent moderate Democrats and the general public.
Again, we're talking with Chris Edwards, the director of tax policy at the great Cato Institute in Washington, D.C. Is more money actually collected for the government if you did go to a flat tax, Chris? I mean, is there any way of really knowing? I mean, after all is said and done, do you think more money would actually be collected if you say, let's say you had like a, just for sake of argument, a 17% or 18% flat tax on income? And let's say that, you know, if you you were an individual, the first $20,000 is tax-free, and everything else above that, 17%. And maybe for a family, you know, it's $35,000 or something like that. Do you think more money?
So Dick Armey proposed a 17% rate, and his overall plan, with a very big standard deduction or family deduction, whatever you want to call it. So his plan would have in the short run lost the government some money, and about a 20% rate at the time was sort of revenue neutral.
Okay.
There is an advantage to go to propose and push a plan that is an overall loss to the government in the short term, and that is you create more short-term winners from tax reform. Because if you make it just sort of neutral in the revenue neutral in the short term, you're going to have some losers and you're going to have some winners. So it's better to go with a system where the government loses money in the short run. You create more winners amongst voters and taxpayers in the short run. But in the long run, the flat tax, there is no doubt it'll create stronger growth for the U.S. economy, more business investment, more jobs, more hiring. In the long run, the government won't lose any money. Okay. And so everyone's a winner in the long run, taxpayers and the government. So I think that's the way to go. You have a plan where the government loses money in the short run, where the vast majority of people are winners in the short run. In the long run, everyone will be a winner with the greater economic growth.
How many people now work for the Internal Revenue Service full time? Do you have any idea?
100,000.
100,000. Okay.
There's about 100,000. And to go, back to your, you know, you wondered whether, you know, they have enough to deal with all the functions they've got. You know, complexity is a massive headache for them. And again, that is Congress's fault. However, I would say with the IRS, I mean, you know, they mainly deal with numbers and computers. You would have thought all the technologies and computers today should have made them a lot more productive, higher productivity. They should be able to crunch all those forms and deal with all those complexity a lot easier than in the past. So, I mean, 100,000 people, frankly, it's a lot of people to deal with the tax system, even as ugly as it is.
Didn't they find time a year or two ago to put on a variety show or something like that that was caught on tape? I remember something about it, very amateur, but I kind of...
Right. No, Senator Tom Coburn has been doing a great job zeroing in on wasteful spending like that at the IRS and other federal agencies. There's no doubt that... A lot of federal agencies, they're sort of a giveaway that they've got too much money in the bank, frankly, when they go on a lot of these wasteful conferences and the like to Las Vegas. So, I found out in doing research for my op-ed up at Daily Caller, the IRS now actually hires 3,000 agents just to deal with identity theft, which is a huge and growing problem with the tax return. I mean, tax returns are being stolen with all this electronic filing, and it's a massive problem, and it shows the problem with the government amassing all this data. So the IRS has got is rapidly hiring agents to deal with identity theft, and so this is one of the problems that Congress is causing for IRS and tax administration. It's so complex. There's so much information the government demands from us now. It's creating this identity theft problem.
I think a lot of people are hiding from file. I knew people that wouldn't file because they were kind of intimidated. They wouldn't even file the forms and not pay tax, not file at all. And I'm thinking if you had a flat tax, something relatively simple, you'd have a lot more people that would be honest about filing their taxes, too.
Oh, I think that's absolutely right. And we've seen that. Actually, there's about 24 countries in the world, including Russia, for example, that have, of all places, that have gone for a flat tax. And what we've seen in those countries is that it massively reduces the black markets and tax cheating, because with a low, simple rate, even the gangster types figure, well, we may as well just pay a basic flat 15% or whatever it is to the government. And so a lot of the countries in Eastern Europe, they've gone to flat taxes, and many of them did so in the 90s, and we have a lot of experience with them now. And they raise a lot more money than they ever did in the years when they had these ugly, complex codes like we have now. So there is a lot we can learn from other countries that have done these major tax reforms. I think particularly if you lowered our corporate tax rate, which is the highest in the world, a completely absurd policy, there'd be a massive inflow of paper profits from multinational corporations in the United States if we dramatically lowered our corporate tax rate. Everyone would be a winner. The government would be a winner. Business investment would be a winner. Workers who work for corporations would be winners. That is a no-brainer policy, and it's astounding to me that Congress and the president can't get together on that one.
Yeah, you would think so. Maybe, again, if we have an all-Republican Congress with a Republican president, we can lower the corporate tax rate.
You would hope so.
Let's see what happens, right?
the Republicans had their chance of controlling the three offices in the 2000s, and they didn't move ahead with that sort of tax reform. So we will see next time. It depends. We'll have to see. We'll have to carefully choose our Republican nominee.
I think you're right.
This time to make sure that it's really a spending cutter and a major tax reformer.
Chris, I really appreciate your coming on just 4 days before tax day to talk with us about the IRS. And you mentioned a couple of things that you're doing, but do you want to kind of do a little PR about either the Cato Institute or what's going on with you here?
Well, check out, if you're interested in the civil liberties abuses of our income taxes, you can check out my new piece up at the Daily Caller today. And for a lot of my other work, look on our Cato's website, downsizinggovernment.org, which is our sort of department-by-department guide on how to cut the government. I mean, there's no doubt that we can get a much better tax reform if we cut the size of government and we reduce the rapacious demand for our money that stems from all the spending they do on Capitol Hill. So we've really got to do both. We got to cut spending and we got to save money, and with that we can have a much better tax system.
I'm with you, Chris. Again, thank you so very much. I look forward
thank
to
you.
Talking with you down the road. Okay, bye, Chris.
Bye-bye.
Chris Edwards. He's director of tax policy at the Cato Institute. He's also the editor of that downsizinggovernment.org. All right, take a short break and stick around. We're going to tell you what the most expensive hotel suites in the world would cost you.
Stamkos. Hedman. Bishop. Will Lord Stanley be the next name you're cheering for? The Tampa Bay Lightning. Be the Thunder. Charge to the playoffs with the Lightning. Playoff tickets are on sale now at the McDonald's ticket office, Ticketmaster.com, or by calling 800-745-3000. Tampa Bay Lightning. Be the Thunder.
Imus in the morning.
Yeah. St. Peter and God go out to play golf one day.
Okay.
And St. Peter wins honors on the first tee, and it's a beautiful, perfectly placed drive. God then tees his ball, and he hits a terrible slice into the woods.
Oh, man.
Just before the ball comes to rest, a squirrel comes scurrying down out of a tree, grabs the ball in his jaws, and takes off across the fairway. As the squirrel comes out into the open, an eagle swoops down out of the trees and grabs the squirrel and starts flying away. As the eagle soars over the green, a bolt of lightning strikes the eagle, and the eagle drops the squirrel, and the squirrel drops a ball, which lands on the green, bounces once, and rolls into the hole.
Good God.
St. Peter turns to God and says, are we going to play golf, or are you going to screw around?
That's right. Yeah, come on.
Great.
Catch Imus in the Morning right here on the stations of the Tantalk Network.
We're back on Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. Again, we want to remind you, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, starting next week, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time, we will be with you. And we're looking forward to that. We've been doing this show for a long time here on the Tantalk Radio Network, and used to do it 10 to 11. So it's kind of good to be back in the saddle at that time. Well, you've been listening, I know, to if you've been listening at all to the news the last 24 hours, you know that Kathleen Sebelius has resigned as Health and Human Services Secretary. The announcement has been made today, and President Obama is nominating Sylvia Matthews Burwell to replace Sebelius. I'm guessing that you're not going to hear a down cry, if that's the right word, on Obamacare from those that are opposed to it. Republicans have said that Sebelius' departure is not going to temper their criticism. Well, that's not surprising. Here is Mitch McConnell, Republican Senate Minority Leader. He says, virtually everybody who has come into contact with this law has had no reason to worry about what it means for the government to control their health care. He says Secretary Sebelius may be leaving, but the problems with this law and the impact it's having on our constituents are not. And he says Obamacare has to go as well. So I don't know. I mean, she was the face of a problem with the website. In a way, you feel sorry for her. In a way, you don't. But the problems are really, in my opinion, just getting started. It was the lipstick on a pig that was the website problem. Now you're going to be confronting the pig as they roll out all of this and as people are signing up for it. And here is Republican National Committee Chairman Rance Priebus. He says Sebelius's going does not fix the problem. He says the next secretary will inherit a mess. Americans facing rising costs, families losing their doctors, and an economy weighed down by intrusive regulations. He says no matter who's in charge of HHS, which is Health and Human Services, Obamacare will continue to be a disaster and will continue to hurt hardworking Americans. I wonder how good this this new woman, Sylvia Matthews Burwell, will be. I understand she's a little bit, she's got a little bit more on the ball when it comes to rules and regulations in this area. Of course, Nancy Pelosi, who is the minority leader in the House and a Democrat, praised Kathleen Sebelius. She said she has been forceful, effective, and essential. And Pelosi went on to say her legacy, meaning Sebelius, will be found in the 7.5 million Americans signing up on the marketplace so far, the 3.1 million covered on their parents' plans, and the millions more getting coverage through the expansion of Medicaid. I've always thought that Nancy Pelosi, who comes from, I think, the San Francisco area in California, has always been smoking and drinking whatever it is that people in San Francisco smoke and drink to make them say those kinds of things. She was the same one that said about Obamacare when they were considering it, we will have to pass it before we know what is in it. And those words will stick with her forever. We will have to pass this legislation before we really know what's in it.
Okay, Mom.
I mean, isn't that the exact, I mean, talk about saying something so honestly true. And
well, I don't think Congress doesn't read those. Congressmen don't read those bills.
More than half what they vote on. You're right. They don't.
You will pass this, or
they you know
very bad is going.
Well,
to happen.
You know what they do. They have their aides that are on their staff. They're supposed to read the bills, right?
Supposed to, sure.
And they redline certain things, and then they hand an expurgated version to the congressman and said, here's the bill, you know. But, you know, with Obamacare, what was it? It was like 20,000 pages? I can't remember. I mean, there was nobody has read it. I think there's a couple people who claim to have read it. I'm not even sure they've read it. And so it's an impossible to digest.
I think I read about one man actually read the whole thing.
Yeah, and they locked him up, didn't they?
Did they?
I think they locked him up.
Seriously, or are you joking?
I'm joking.
Oh, okay, yeah, they locked him up.
They locked him
up. That's the only place.
But that is
the only place you have enough free time to read it. A lot of time on your hands.
Seriously? Did they lock him up? They probably did lock him up, actually, Lee.
They might. I haven't heard from him since.
I haven't heard from his attorney since, so he's not made any headway in getting him out, I don't think. Anyway, what a mess. And, I mean, the more it's being implemented, people, you know, I guess we have a country of low-information people. They seem to think no matter what when everything else goes wrong that the government gets involved in, they seem to think somehow this time it's going to work. You know, somehow with health care, now in this case, yeah, it's going to work. It's going to work. What the hell are you talking about? It's never going to work.
It's like, I don't know, a 30-second commercial or something. It's supposed to, you know, get their attention and sell them on something in 30 seconds. Hey, Obamacare is going to be really great. It's going to be cheap, and you're going to be healthy.
I mean, they just blue sky it in their mind. Everything's going to work on this if we just give it a chance. Now, it's not going to work, but you know what's going to happen. All the people that claim that we should have the government running our health care will always find reasons to blame other than the concept will never work. They will blame insurance companies, doctors, hospitals. They'll blame attorneys. They'll blame, and they'll really believe it. They'll say, well, you know, it would have worked. Well, nothing works in a socialist country. Nothing works that the government runs, you know, that the private sector used to run. Nothing works better. And healthcare will be exactly like it.
Where we promised, life, liberty, and the pursuit of healthcare. And the pursuit of health.
People actually probably believe that healthcare
in the Constitution.
But see, most people don't even know what you're talking about when you bring that up. They wouldn't even know what document you're talking about. But
yeah, that was a piece of paper written by a bunch of old angry white guys.
Yeah,
angry white men.
Or they wouldn't even know. Most people, if you said that, wouldn't know where to come out. What document you're talking about? They wouldn't even name the Declaration of Independence nor the preamble to the Constitution. They wouldn't know what they were. They don't know. And I would say 75%, if you walk down the street and you read from either one of those documents, I would grant you 75% of the people wouldn't name it, wouldn't know.
I wonder, I'll bet Kimmel tried something like that, or Leno.
Yeah.
One of those guys.
But it's sad. It's not funny. It's really sad how low-informed we are. And then you wonder why people think that this whole healthcare thing is going to work. It's the same people that don't know that
they're going to get something for nothing. Sorry.
No, that's all right. They don't know. They just don't have any information to go on to come up with whatever it is. I mean, they just don't. Anyway, we're going to take a short break on that very optimistic note, and we're going to be back, and we are going to give you the top 10 costliest hotel rooms.
Imus in the morning.
Laurie Flynn here with us. Smile, Laurie, how are you? How are you, Smile?
I'm about the same as I am every day.
Okay, so. And why are you here?
I got nowhere else to go. I mean, I'm pretty much at the mercy of whoever drives a van. Wherever they park and put the elevator, that's where I go.
There he is.
Okay. What's on your mind? Do you have something to share with us?
Well, I've never had a lot of patience with feminists, you know. You can't please them. Probably because they're all lesbians. I built my empire in glorifying the female body, but they called it exploitation. Even though I always strive for the artistic sensibility, I celebrate the natural beauty of women. And now celebrities like Cameron Diaz and Gwyneth Paltrow are championing that very cause, calling for an end to bikini waxing and a return to the full-on 70s Earth Mama shrubbery. This is a legitimate deal. There were 2 New York Times articles about this subject in the last 6 months alone. Is a movement for women to forego the razor and the laser and return to a more natural state. I like my women's private parts the way I like my burger, with nothing on it.
Oh, man.
But now that I'm older and wiser, I see the value in eschewing the grooming. It adds an air of mystery.
This is not
fair. Besides, it's not like I'm going to be able to do anything with it anyway. Somebody push me in front of a bus, please.
You're going to hell, I'm telling you now.
God.
Oh, we all are. That is not that's not funny.
Catch Imus in the morning right here on the stations of the Tantalk Network.
I don't know whether to blame Lee Clark for those things. I'm laughing so hard for the Imus spots that we do.
That's
here. They are hilarious.
I
tell you what, you got to listen to Imus in the morning. You want to laugh. Now, I don't recommend that you listen to him while driving because you'll be laughing so hard you'll probably drive into the back of a dump truck. So you got to be very careful about it. But if you can pull over to the side of the road and listen to some of that, he's pretty funny.
We'll know how many listeners we have, judging how many people pull over to the side of the
Yeah, or how many accidents occur, right?
Or not tomorrow morning. Monday, yeah.
On Monday. You are
almost
right.
Almost listening to Imus.
They do. I hope they will. Well, you know what else is coming here to Florida? The vote on medical marijuana in November. And because there is a vote coming, the marijuana industrial complex, can we call it the marijuana industrial complex? It's in full swing in the Sunshine State. With the question of legalizing medical marijuana that voters will vote on November the 4th, entrepreneurs popping up in an effort to get in on the ground floor. 18 medical marijuana companies have registered with the state this year. Medical Marijuana of Brevard, LLC, and one called Medical Marijuana Business Lawyers, LLC, and Medical Marijuana Centers of Florida, Incorporated, are among the first positioning to take advantage of a boom in this whole industry, should the voters approve the referendum. Now, the referendum has to get 60%, not 50, but 60%, to become a law. But some people, like Daniel Curtis, he's founder of the Florida Medical Marijuana Treatment Center Institute, or if you just use the acronym, Fumatisica. So he's founder of Fumatisica.
Can you pronounce, can you repeat that?
Yes.
I didn't get it the
sure,
first
you didn't get it the first time. This is just the acronym for
somebody
Dan
didn't think,
Curtis.
Think that through.
Fumatisica is the...
They probably stoned when they put that together, right? What were they thinking?
It's the Florida Medical Marijuana Treatment Center Institute. I mean, you can't say that very easily, so you got to come up with an acronym, and I'm giving this gentleman an acronym as a possible selection, that's all. And Fumatisica is, I think, as good an acronym as you're going to get for it. Anyway, Dan Curtis, the founder of it, says that he's going to let the other people set everything up, mine for the gold. He's going to sell, he says, the, quote, pickaxes. He's going to offer courses and seminars to those who want to jump into the medical marijuana business. Now, see, this is indeed going to be a huge industry if indeed it passes. Now, I don't think they're going to get 60% of Floridians to go for it. Hmm. First of all, the median age in Florida, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, do you think the older people in Florida are going to go, yeah, baby? You know, I don't think so. Now, maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe you're...
What do you think, Lee? Do you have any thought on that 60%?
I'll go with your judgment
you
on
think?
That.
Yeah. I don't know. I have no idea, but I think it's going to be very tough to get that through. Now, I can see another, you know, states like maybe in Oregon and other states. Do they have... Can you do... I got to look this up. I think Oregon... Or no, Colorado has passed it.
Mm-hmm.
That we know, but yeah, California has not, I don't think. And California is such a huge state, such a diverse state. I wonder if it could even pass there. Anyway,
did I tell you my the story about the passage of the legalizing marijuana in Colorado?
No, please
sounds
do.
Like I'm smoking it right now. But
no.
I was on the phone to one of our providers because we had a problem with our satellite.
Okay, you providers. You mean providers in technical
providers,
equipment. not your personal provider.
No.
Okay,
providers of our satellite feed, and I sent a satellite receiver back to them because it was malfunctioning and we needed a new one. So anyway, they got it and sent another one back to us, and then they called us on the phone and said, we think we sent you the wrong one. So I called them back, and, you know, when I got the message, I didn't get the name or of the person who had called or anything. All I had was a number and, like, some vague message. So I called back and couldn't get a hold of the guy who had made the call to us. And when I did finally get somebody who knew something about what was going on, he said, well, read the serial number off the back of the satellite receiver. So I read him the serial number. Each one has a unique serial number, of course, which identifies that specific unit. And he said, oh, no, that's not the one we sent. That one's here. He said, I mean, no, I just read you the serial number off the back of the unit.
You've got the unit.
And he's going, no, that one's here. And he was all confused and everything. We never got anything resolved. And then I realized, oh, they legalized marijuana. This was in Denver. I said, they legalized weed last weekend or whatever, last week. And everybody in Denver is stoned out of their mind no idea what is going on.
So you were
on.
Talking with a stoner.
A stoner tech guy.
Hey, man, you don't have that piece of equipment because we got it here, it's, man.
No, that's...
I got it right here,
that's not the one
here,
we'll say
man.
He was just befuddled, confused.
Oh, my goodness.
And he was like, oh, finally he goes, oh, wait. And then, you know, there's a long silence, and while he was doing God knows what.
Hold on, man. Maybe I got to check.
Dave's not here, man.
I got to check.
Who made this? Dave, Dave's not here, man.
He's not here, man.
No, we should play some Cheech
and Chong. I'm not here, man.
None of us are here, man. Everyone's out
so
back,
did you,
man.
Did you get? Did you solve your problem with the
equipment? Never resolved the problem. I still have a bum unit. I can't go through that again.
Oh, that's too bad. I don't blame you. Oh, my goodness me. Well, I'll tell you what. I guess it's about time for our, because we've been promoting it the entire show, the top 10 most expensive hotel rooms in the world.
Wow.
And Lee, I know you've been in a few of them, but this is a very interesting... interesting list, and it was started last year. They have updated it from last year so that we should have the current room rates for these particular hotels.
Yeah, because I was thinking about doing something this weekend.
Well,
I've got my black, you know, my black card, my Black American Express.
Oh, if you got the Black American Express, you could go right to the number one most expensive hotel suite.
Mm-hmm.
But we will start out with number 10. So if you are ready, and Ringo is ready, here is...
Ringo's packing
okay, he's packing.
Ringo, one more little job for you. Okay, he's ready.
He's ready to go. Then here indeed
packing is marijuana for the weekend.
Oh, my goodness. Here is the 10th most expensive hotel room in the world. It is the penthouse suite at the Martinez Hotel in Cannes, France.
Oh, in Cannes, of course.
Yeah.
Well,
and you
where
know
I stay
what
every year for the film festival.
You know what it costs for an overnight?
I think it was $10,000 last time.
No, you only wish it was $10,000. It's $18,000 for one overnight. Yeah,
outrageous.
It is outrageous. They've raised it. It should. It's no better than $16,500. I've been there, but they've raised it to $18,000.
It was $10,000 last time I was there.
Wow,
which I thought was perfectly reasonable.
Well, this is the penthouse suite in. The Martinez Hotel
is... Do you get five French hookers with that? Or
I don't know, but this is the biggest, most expensive, and the only terraced penthouse suite on the Côte d'Azur. So that's one of the reasons it's so doggone expensive. Number 9. You got to go to Moscow for this if you indeed want to, but it's the Ritz-Carlton suite in the Ritz-Carlton Moscow. An overnight there, $18,200. Now, what do you get for it? Get floor-to-ceiling windows. It'll give you the most beautiful views of the Kremlin, Red Square, St. Basil's Cathedral, and Christ the Savior Cathedral. Also, you'll have a direct view into Putin's bedroom window, and if you're lucky, he'll be undressing. No, I'm just kidding on that part.
Hopefully he'll be with his new squeeze, his new girlfriend.
Exactly.
She's pretty hot.
Number 8. The Royal Suite... Burj Al Arab in Dubai. In Dubai. You know what the nightly rate is there? $19,000. What do you get for it? Your suite is two stories, 8,400 square feet, features a view over the Arabian Sea. So that's
And they give you 10 barrels of oil with that, too.
I think they do.
It's complimentary.
Number 7. The Imperial Suite in the Park Hyatt in Paris, and the nightly rate there, an even $20,000.
A cool 25K, huh?
No, 20.
Oh, 20.
Just 20.
20K.
Yeah, you get a little bit of a deal.
That's the early checkout
discount?
That's
the early checkout discount. This pricey suite is located on the fifth floor of this Imperial Suite Park Hyatt, and it's 200 square meters. 200 square meters. You could probably jog around it and really get in some good exercise now that I think about that. Number 6. We go to the Bahamas. The Bridge Suite in the Atlantis in the Bahamas. Overnight rate, $22,000. It's located on top of a bridge, that connects the two Royal Towers buildings, so it overlooks the entire resort and marina. In the Atlantis. $22,000. Number 5. Tokyo. Presidential Suite, Ritz-Carlton, Tokyo. $25,000 overnight. Located on the 53rd floor above Tokyo. Spectacular view that includes the Imperial Palace, Outer Gardens, and Roppongi Hills, whatever the heck that is.
You know what the problem with that room was?
What was it? I knew you were there, but I couldn't
remember. Well, it was those 5-foot ceilings. You had to.
You could stand up straight.
Crouched over.
Yeah.
And
no wonder.
They had no problem.
And you've had back problems ever since.
Ever since.
Yeah.
And banged my head on several lighting fixtures.
Oh, my goodness me.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
Thank God for that medical marijuana.
Yeah.
Solve that problem.
Number four. On to Rome, the City of Lights. The Via La Capilla Suite at the Westin Excelsior Hotel. An overnight there is $29,000. The suite is located on the 5th and 6th floor underneath the cupola of the hotel, which was made famous by Federico Fellini movies. It covers 6,099 square feet, has an additional 1,800 square feet of balconies and terraces. In other words, it's a sweet suite.
That's cheaper than the Vatican.
As a matter of fact, it might be on that list. It might be on our list, the Vatican. Number three, we go to New York for the Ty Warner Penthouse. The Ty Warner Penthouse in the Four Seasons Hotel in New York. The nightly rate, $34,000. This is a 9-room suite, has walls inlaid with mother of pearl, gold, and platinum woven fabrics. The suite is located on the 52nd floor of New York's tallest hotel, with floor-to-ceiling bay windows offering a breathtaking 360-degree view of Manhattan. Number two, Las Vegas, Hugh Hefner Sky Villa at the Palms Casino Resort. Now, you may have heard of this one, Lee, because you used to work in Las Vegas. But if you did not and you wanted to spend a night there, an overnight is $40,000.
Nice even number, right?
A nice even number. If anybody knows how to vacation in Las Vegas, it would be Hugh Hefner. And even though he's known as a homebody, he has spent a few nights away from his mansions at the Sky Villa. He's been at this place.
Yeah, I saw it on television.
Did you?
When Hugh took some bunnies over there.
Well, so the suite itself was built to model the original Playboy Mansion.
Oh, so he'd feel right at home, I guess.
I guess he would.
He never has to get out of his pajamas, even on the trip over.
Yeah, he's always in pajamas. And did you know the original Playboy Mansion is in Chicago?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No. Well, where you're from.
Where I was
used
from.
Used to hang with.
Yeah, and when I was way back, right? Hugh was, doing all of those things in the Playboy Mansion in Chicago. And finally, the most expensive hotel room in the world. Here we go. It's the Royal Penthouse Suite, the President Wilson Hotel in Geneva. The nightly rate, $53,000. The Imperial Suite, actually an entire top floor of the hotel, reached via a private elevator, has 4 bedrooms, 6 bathrooms, mosaic marble floor, cocktail lounge, and a terrace with a dramatic view through the bulletproof windows over the city. Lake Geneva and Mont Blanc are the two cities, all of which will overlook the lake itself. The suite is decorated in a contemporary style with marble and hardwood floors. The living room has a billiard table, a library, and a cocktail lounge with a view of the water fountain, and it can accommodate a very intimate 40 people.
That's where I stay when I go to check on my
financial holdings.
Yeah,
in Geneva.
My Swiss account.
The Royal Penthouse
secret.
Suite.
Not
wow. Amazing.
It's not so secret anymore.
Not very secret anymore. So. Hey, everybody, thank you so very much for listening. Remember, we will join you 10 to 11 a.m. this Monday. Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. Talk to you then.
WTAN, Clearwater, Tampa Bay. WDCF, Dade City, Tampa Bay. WZHR, Zephyr Hills, Tampa Bay. Listen.